This is Ozarks at Large. Almost her entire professional scientific life, Dr. Sydney Cameron has been studying, researching, and observing bumblebees. She teaches at the University of Illinois, and earlier this month, she discussed bumblebees and declines in their numbers during a visit to the University of Arkansas. Before she gave her lecture, she came by the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about the intriguing little animals. She told me one of the advantages of studying bumblebees in her lab is that you can identify each bee in the colony and follow its progress.
And if you want to know what might be affecting their behavior, how their changes in behavior occur over time, what might be the mechanisms for these behavior cast changes. So they have, just like honeybees, they have foragers, they have nurses, they have guards, they have patrol bees, and they have the queen. And you might ask the question, like in a honeybee colony, does the nurse bee start out as a very young bee, and then as that bee ages, does it turn into a forager at the end of its life like honeybees do? And that's where I began when I left Berkeley and went to the University of Kansas to ask, what are the factors that are affecting the different behavioral castes of the bumblebee colony, because no one had really studied that. And you can, the fabulous thing is you can mark every individual and you can observe that individual's behavior over time with either video, snapshot observations on an hourly or daily basis and determine what is causing or what factors might be affecting the behavioral changes, if there are any. It turns out that in bumblebees, if you're born big, you're a forager. If you're born small, you're a nurse. It's a much simpler system, if you will, than a honeybee, where there's an age-based change over time in their behavioral repertoire.
Bumblebees, among the most important pollinators we have?
They are among the most important pollinators for wild, both wild and crop, agricultural crop products. So, for example, bumblebees are primarily a temperate group, very, very efficient pollinators of certain whole families of plants. For example, all the ericaceae, all the blueberries, all the raspberries, strawberries, all these things, they're not all ericaceae, but blueberries primarily, cranberries. Those are both ericaceae. Very big crops today. Mm-hmm. Very, very important crops worldwide, particularly in the United States. And they are extraordinarily efficient at pollinating this type of plant because they can do a buzz pollination when they land on a flower. They emit a particular frequency of sound from their thorax by decoupling their wings, which come from the flight muscles in the thorax. They decouple their wings and they kind of do a bzz, bzz. And so they, when they do this bzz, bzz, they don't, their wings don't move, but instead their flight muscles contract. And this bzz is at a particular frequency that enables the little sporangium, the little tiny, it's actually a sporangium, it's a little pore in the anther that releases the pollen out through the flower, and it lands on to the bee, and off the bee goes with a whole load of pollen. Other bees don't have this. It's called buzz pollination. They don't have this buzz pollination behavior, so they're not very efficient at pollinating any of these ericaceous flowers. The same with roses, the same with raspberries, strawberries, and in particular, in terms of agricultural crop production, greenhouse tomatoes has been an enormous big business all throughout Europe, because they can extend their growing season enormously. And they started to rear bumblebees instead of hand pollinate the tomatoes. They brought in bumblebees in the late 1980s. They discovered how to produce bumblebees on a mass scale, mm-hmm, in Europe, started in the Netherlands, then Belgium, then Britain. And they've become very successful. And they introduced bumblebee rearing into the United States from the Netherlands and from Belgium in the early 1990s. And they have become a multi-billion dollar business for crop production throughout Europe, Israel, Japan, and China is beginning to get interested in developing bumblebees for greenhouse pollination.
So basically, I guess, for lack of a better term, commercially raised bumblebees.
Commercial bumblebee rearing is enormous business. It's less important in the United States, where they started in California, moved to Michigan, and they also have them in Western Canada and Eastern Canada, because our season, particularly in the West, is so much longer. Mm-hmm. than the seasons in Europe. But in Canada, they're big business. And they are increasingly important in the United States as they realize they can also take them out of the greenhouses and put them into the blueberry fields.
Just release them.
Just release them and allow them. They take the colony. The industry has developed a unit colony, shall we say, that is contained within a cardboard box that prevents the cardboard and plastic prevents the queen from escaping, and only the workers can come and go. And workers have a relatively short lifespan, so those workers aren't going to inhabit a place where they're not supposed to be permanently. They come and go into the field, and then eventually, after 2 or 3 weeks, they have a natural mortality. And then the farmer is supposed to remove the box from the field at the end of the season, once the pollination has occurred, and put it away. And that's the end of the colony. And so each year they'll buy a batch of new colonies to do this. And they're quite expensive. I don't know what the cost of a honeybee colony has now gone way up since the Varroa mites and the Nosema and the various other viruses that have caused their serious collapse, if you will, or serious decline. They used to be under $50 a colony for a honeybee hive. Now I think they're up to $175. And I think a bumblebee colony is about $200 plus.
You mentioned the honeybees and the viruses. Are there any concerns about wild bumblebee populations in North America?
Yes. We began a study that was funded through the USDA 3 years ago because there had been local observations of bumblebees disappearing from the West. Professor at the University of California at Davis, Robin Thorpe, determined that in the late 1990s, a species of bumblebee in southern Oregon, northern California, had a very narrow range, small range, but it had been abundant for years in that one range, began to go downhill rather precipitously. So the decline was very apparent to him, and then he noticed another close relative of that species, Bombus occidentalis. Franklin I was the first species that he observed, and then occidentalis sort of almost simultaneously, he started seeing precipitous declines in the populations, which was, and this species was very widespread throughout northern, western, and eastern California, all the way up into the Rocky Mountains. And he basically summoned the alarm, and people began then to think, gee, you know, I haven't seen such and such a species in my meadows in Maine. And then the Canadians got to looking at this in the eastern part of Canada. A couple of years ago, a paper was published. And what they were doing was basically comparing their knowledge of what the populations were like 20, 30 years ago with what they suddenly noted. And we thought, gee. And then a National Academy of Sciences study came out in 2007, and it seemed pretty serious. That very same year, my team at the University of Illinois submitted a proposal to the USDA to study what they'd been observing in the West and a little bit in the East, and we were funded. So all of the sort of local observations were beginning to manifest themselves in the media just about the time we got our funding, and our team was to focus on the reality of these local observations on a much more nationwide scale. So was there really seriously a decline going on? And if so, how much? And what might be causing that decline? And we've just wrapped that study up last spring. And we have a paper in press now on the results of that work. And what we've found is indeed there has been quite a precipitous decline, particularly or almost exclusively within one small clade of one closely related group of relatives, in particular the Bombus sensu stricto group. And this has 5 species in North America, quite a few species in Europe, but one of the species that was used for the original bumblebee rearing, commercial rearing practices in California, is one of these species that seriously declined. So in terms of causal factors of the decline, we know that there have been 5 species that have declined quite seriously in the last decade. Let's say 20 years, basically. And we don't know if they'll bounce back, but we just know what we've found thus far by comparing records over the last century from museum collections all around the country. And these invaluable natural history collections allow us to determine how many bees were in such and such a a region, or at least roughly relative abundances,
sure.
and how broadly distributed was their range. And we know that the ranges have shrunk seriously of these five species that we know are declining, and their relative abundances have declined. So we ask, well, why? And what we've determined is that, in fact, there was a hypothesis that came out of the University of California Davis lab, Robin Thorpe's lab, that it probably got started through the rearing industry. They brought species from Europe the way it started is they took a species from California, they took queens, they determined how to rear these queens in facilities in Europe, and then they reintroduced those California queens in colonies into their facility, and that was the beginning of their commercial rearing program. After 2 or 3 years, that commercial industry complained that they had a pathogen that was really hurting their production of bees. And to make a long story short, they eventually moved out of California into Michigan. However, that hypothesis that the pathogens that were sort of hurting the industry in California that caused them to basically leave and move into Michigan where they could rear other species, was never studied. So the hypothesis, the pathogen got out of the facility into the wild, spread to the other close relatives of this genus. And that's where we are now. That was hypothesized but never tested. No one collected bees. No one looked at the pathogen status of the bees. So we kind of looking backwards in time, trying to figure out whether indeed that pathogen is the cause or a part of the cause. It's usually not something quite as simple as one thing, but we think that we're getting close to that answer.
Dr. Sidney Cameron is a professor at the University of Illinois and talked with me during a visit to the University of Arkansas earlier this month. If you'd like to see a list of flowers and plants you can put in your garden or backyard to attract more bumblebees, you can go to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com. Also, at our website, you can hear more from my conversation with Dr. Cameron, including how she dropped ornithology to study bees and how researchers conduct studies of bees in the wild. Plus, you'll find a link to beespotter.com to help you identify species of bees. All of that and more at our website, ozarksatlarge.com.